Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. He was last here in 1960 to address a tumultuous meeting of the UN General Assembly. Now Fidel Castro is back in the United States, again to address the General Assembly, and Jim Kilpatrick reports that the security measures, which were strict in 1960, are extraordinary now.
Castro spent his first night in the United States in 19 years at the Cuban mission in Midtown Manhattan. 500 New York police are assigned to guard the mission around the clock. Another 2,000 officers are available for security duties while the Cuban leader remains in the United States. He landed early this morning at a remote section of New York's Kennedy Airport. It is unusual for visiting dignitaries to arrive at 1 o'clock in the morning, but it is all part of what airport officials say was the most elaborate security precautions ever taken at JFK. All other flights were suspended during the arrival. Police helicopters circled overhead. 80 police cars lined the remote runway. Only a few American journalists were allowed on the field, and they were kept about 150 feet away from the plane. 20 minutes after landing, the Cuban president, wearing his usual green army fatigues, walked down the steps of the plane. A motorcade of 42 vehicles left the airport under tight security for the Cuban mission. Police kept a small but vocal group of anti-Castro demonstrators a block away as the motorcade arrived. Jim Kilpatrick, CBS News, New York.
The security is so rigid that no announcement has been made about any of Castro's activities today. As for what he'll be doing tomorrow, we'll hear from CBS News UN correspondent Richard C. Hartlett.
So far, only part of tomorrow's schedule has been announced. Apparently, Castro will spend much of Friday at UN headquarters addressing the General Assembly just before noon, speaking to the non-aligned and meeting some of the top diplomats at a lunch to be arranged by Secretary General Waldheim. What Castro does today is up to him. He may spend it at the Cuban mission, receiving visitors there, perhaps including businessmen, members of the Cuban community, or sympathizers. This would greatly simplify the security problem. But Castro is his own man and owes no one an explanation of what he does, least of all the U.S. government. He is here as a foreign head of state on United Nations business. The only restriction is that he cannot travel more than 25 miles from the center of Manhattan without giving notice. No indication that he has any such plans, and he has enough to do at the UN. Castro has fences to mend with the non-aligned, many of whom feel that at their summit conference in Havana last month, he pushed them too hard toward the Soviet bloc. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
1,800 U.S. Marines and support troops are scheduled to sail aboard Navy vessels today from Morehead City, North Carolina, for Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. They'll take part in training exercises in line with President Carter's moves to counter the Soviet military presence on Cuban soil. The departure had been set for yesterday, but was delayed by bad weather. Wall Street has now gone through its three worst days in years. Yesterday wasn't as bad as Tuesday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, which earlier was down 25 points, closed yesterday down much more than 8 points. Taken together, though, as we hear from Gary Shepard, these 3 days have been a stupefying experience for the New York Stock Exchange.
So far this week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has fallen more than 48 points, and some brokers think the sell-off will continue as falling prices trigger margin calls and investors sell out rather than put up more cash. Howard McLaren is one such broker.
Certainly not the end of the stock market or anything like that, but we're having a little bit of a washout here. The tape, 57, 58 minutes late, you have to assume that the little guy is selling stocks because the tape doesn't go late on block trades of 100,000 shares.
During yesterday's trading, a record 81,620,000 shares changed hands, and investors gathered at brokerage houses to commiserate about their losses. Some were willing to talk about them.
All I know is it took me 9 months to get to this point. It's only taken 3 days to drop everything that I've made.
Are you in the market?
Yeah, very heavily.
Have you sold?
Nope.
What does that feel like?
It feels like my stomach is turning a lot of different ways. They pulled a sneak attack on us like Pearl Harbor over the weekend and jumped us 1% on the discount rate.
Federal Reserve.
Well, who else?
Tell us your name, sir.
I forgot it.
During the past three trading sessions, more than $41 billion in stock value has been wiped away. Market analysts say investors are selling because they think the Federal Reserve's program to fight inflation will plunge the economy into a much deeper recession than expected and possibly cause a serious shortage of credit, which in recent times is what the American economy has been running on. Gary Shepard, CBS News, New York.
The dollar lost half a yen today in Tokyo, and it's mixed on the European exchanges. Gold is declining again. It was fixed in London this morning at exactly $400 an ounce and is trading at around that level in Zurich. A Senate House Conference Committee goes into session today on Capitol Hill, and Mariah McLaughlin reports that it will make another attempt to settle the differences that have kept the two chambers at loggerheads.
In today's episode of the continuing saga of those government department funding measures which are being held hostage in the Congress until the Senate and the House can settle their arguments over federally funded abortions and a congressional pay raise, House conferees will meet Senate conferees. The Senate wants a liberal federal abortion policy and no pay raise. The House wants to restrict funding for abortions, and it wants a pay raise. Until the two houses can reach some compromise, there is no more money for a whole slew of government agencies, and some government workers will begin to feel the crunch as early as next week. So today, members of the House and Senate Appropriations Committees will meet and try to thrash out their differences. The prospect seems gloomy. Mariah McLaughlin, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Figures on the amounts of money raised thus far for announced and unannounced candidates for the presidency are now being examined in Washington, and Robert Shackney takes a look.
In the only state where Kennedy for President forces have tried to raise large amounts of money, it's been hard going so far. Reports filed with the Federal Election Commission show that the Carter campaign forces have raised twice as much money in Florida as the Kennedy campaign. Over $400,000 for Carter, less than $200,000 for Kennedy. Nationwide, so far this year, the Carter campaign has raised $2.4 million and spent $1.5 million. By contrast, Kennedy committees have raised only about $350,000, and the Brown for President campaign has raised only $260,000. On the Republican side, spending is far heavier, $12 million divided among seven candidates. The biggest fundraiser and spender by far is John Connally, whose campaign has collected $4.3 million in contributions. Ronald Reagan has raised $2.7 million, George Bush and Philip Crane over $2 million each, Howard Baker, Bob Dole, and John Anderson lesser amounts. Robert Shackney, CBS News, Washington.
President Carter this morning is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. He met there last night with the governors of eight western states, where his water policies have aroused considerable resentment, especially the use of water for development of synthetic fuels. Mr. Carter did his best to reassure the governors. "I strongly believe," he said, "that we must preserve the essential and historical role of the states in the process of allocating water among competing needs." He said the federally supported energy development should be accomplished without preemption or change of state water laws, right, or responsibilities. The Zimbabwe-Rhodesian Peace Conference resumes this morning in what looks like a make-or-break session. Mike Lee reports from London.
The British chairman, Lloyd Carrington, has given the Patriotic Front leaders until today to give their definitive answer as to whether they accept the controversial British plan for a new Rhodesian constitution. The guerrilla leaders would like to leave the constitutional question open to negotiation and move on to other issues, such as control of the armed forces and other transitional powers. But with the so-called Salisbury delegation, led by the Prime Minister, Bishop Mujarewa, having already accepted the British plan, Lord Carrington has laid down the law, in effect saying to the Patriotic Front, take it or leave it. If there's no constitutional agreement, there's no longer a peace conference. It's not the first time the British have issued ultimatums and deadlines, and there are still hopes by all sides that the constitutional issue can be resolved and the talks saved. Mike Lee, CBS News, London.
The 1979 Nobel Prize for Medicine was awarded jointly this morning to Alan M. Cormack of Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts, and Godfrey Hounsfield of Britain. They were honored for their work in computer-assisted tomography, which concerns X-rays of the body and gives doctors a better view of human tissue. The second game of the 1979 World Series is scheduled for tonight in Baltimore. The Baltimore Orioles won last night's opening game, delayed from Tuesday night by bad weather, defeating the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-4. The Orioles scored all their runs in the first inning.